From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Diane Rehm. Mississippi will ask voters next week to decide whether to give legal status to fertilized human eggs. If the ballot measure is approved, abortion would become tantamount to murder. In vitro fertility clinics and popular methods of birth control could be outlawed. Many observers deem it one of the most grave assaults on women's reproductive rights in decades. Similar efforts to redefine personhood are in the works in several states. Colorado voters twice defeated personhood initiatives, but many expect the Mississippi measure to pass. The latest tactics in the battle against abortion. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Craig Windham. Police in Richmond, Virginia have dismantled a camp where protesters aligned with the Occupy Wall Street movement have been staying for 2 weeks. At least a dozen people were arrested. After the park was cleared, bulldozers moved in to remove debris left by the demonstrators. There were dozens of arrests at protest camps in several other cities over the weekend, including Oakland, California, and Portland, Oregon. State troopers in Tennessee have stopped enforcing a curfew around the state capitol in Nashville after arresting dozens of protesters there last week. Blake Farmer of member station WPLN reports the halt in enforcement is emboldening some of the demonstrators.
You could argue that the curfew meant to disband them only fueled the fire of protesters like Lindsay Crinks.
I think that the state has done us a favor in the sense that they've attracted more attention to the movement, and right now the attention is on our First Amendment rights.
Crinks hopes that attention on free speech can now be diverted to corporate money in politics and the concentration of wealth in the U.S. Tennessee law enforcement officials haven't explained why they stopped enforcing the curfew, but when they were arresting protesters, a night court judge refused to sign the warrants, saying no one has the right to put a curfew on the public plaza where the demonstrators are gathered. For NPR News, I'm Blake Farmer in Nashville.
Utility crews in the Northeast are working to restore power to more than 2.5 million homes and businesses whose electricity was knocked out by a snowstorm over the weekend. Ron Morano is with New Jersey Power and Light.
Unusually early for snow, and it is a heavy, wet snow. That combined with the leaves being on the trees has brought down trees throughout our service territory, northern New Jersey, as well as impacted our equipment.
Connecticut Governor Daniel Malloy says cots were set up for travelers stranded at Hartford's Bradley International Airport.
Planes are moving in or out. There's some delay associated with that. Roads, interstates are in pretty good shape. Rural roads are still bad. That includes 100 state road closures.
The storm has prompted hundreds of school closures across the Northeast today. Qantas Airlines is trying to get about 70,000 passengers to their destinations, passengers stranded when the airline grounded all of its planes over the weekend. An arbitration court in Australia has put an end to a long-running labor dispute between Qantas and its employees. Australia's Prime Minister Julia Gillard.
This is a win for passengers stranded around the country and around the world.
Qantas CEO Alan Joyce says he's sorry for the inconvenience.
I want to apologize to our customers. We very much regret the inconvenience and stress that has been caused by this action.
President Obama meets at this hour with former British Prime Minister Tony Blair at the White House. They're expected to discuss Middle East peace efforts. This afternoon, the president signs an executive order directing the Food and Drug Administration to take steps to reduce shortages of some prescription drugs. On Wall Street, the Dow is down 140 points. This is NPR News. Workers are trying to stabilize a damaged grain elevator in Kansas so searchers can safely look for three missing people believed to have been killed by a blast that tore through that structure. Three other workers are known dead and two were seriously injured. Elizabeth Lane lives nearby.
It's just devastating. And to know that there's individuals missing just makes me sick.
The explosion left a 2- to 3-story structure askew on top of the grain elevator. NATO officially ends its military operation in Libya today. The air campaign was aimed at protecting Libyan civilians from forces loyal to ousted leader Muammar Gaddafi. NPR's Peter Kenyon reports Libya's National Transitional Council wants one of Gaddafi's sons, Saif, brought to justice in a Libyan court.
Information Minister Mahmoud Shammam told reporters in Tripoli that if Saif al-Islam is handed over to the International Criminal Court, the council won't object. But he said most Libyans want to see Gaddafi's son tried at home. Shammam offered no progress on the investigation into the killing of Muammar Gaddafi. He said personally he wasn't surprised by what happened when the dictator was found in the desert by angry young men.
They act in the way Romanian people act against Ceausescu, the way that Italian civilized people against Mussolini. Why you are crying with Gaddafi?
Separately, the outgoing head of the council's executive board announced that chemical weapons experts are due in Libya this week to deal with Gaddafi-era weapons caches. Peter Kenyon, NPR News, Tripoli.
GOP presidential candidate Herman Cain's campaign says allegations he sexually harassed two women in the 1990s are untrue. That was a period when Cain headed the National Restaurant Association. I'm Craig Windham, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Carnegie Corporation of New York, a foundation created to do what Andrew Carnegie called real and permanent good, celebrating 100 years of philanthropy.
Joining us, I'm Diane Rehm. In 1973, the U.S. Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade decision granted women the right to have an abortion in the first trimester. Since then, anti-abortion advocates have worked to overturn that ruling. They've made gains in recent years by chipping away at laws on the state level. Now, there's a ballot measure in Mississippi that would give fertilized human eggs legal status. We talk about the Mississippi initiative and measures elsewhere in the country. Joining me here in this studio, Robert Destro of the Catholic University of America, Suzanne Novak of the Center for Reproductive Rights, and John Fassman of The Economist magazine. I hope you'll join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. But first, joining us by phone from Mississippi is Walter Hoy. He's a spokesman for Personhood USA, president of the Issues for Life Foundation in California. He's in Mississippi to promote the Personhood Initiative to communities of color. Good morning to you, sir. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, sir. I want to just to begin, read to our audience Amendment 26, the measure that's on Mississippi's ballot this November, that actually defines a person as being every human being from the moment of fertilization, cloning, or the functional equivalent thereof. Tell me how you would express the ultimate goal of Proposition 26 in Mississippi.
The ultimate goal of the Amendment 26 in Mississippi is probably more akin to personhood goal, and that being realizing the final chapter of the civil rights movement, where everybody is recognized as a person.
And that means from the moment of conception. Is that correct?
It means from our earliest biological beginning, that single-cell embryo, to the senior citizen who's facing end-of-life decisions, to that disabled war veteran. Everybody is a person.
I understand, Mr. Hoyt, that you've been tasked with speaking to communities of color in Mississippi about the issue. What is it that you say specifically to them?
Well, one, I do something similar to what you've done. We do talk about the language. We do address, some of the questions that anybody has, and then I remind them of what it was like when we were not persons, and then we get it. We understand what's happening when somebody's deciding who is a person and who isn't a person.
I wonder how you respond to what many people who've studied the Mississippi Initiative say, indeed, that it could restrict birth control. How do people respond to that aspect of it?
When we get those questions, we've got to get people to understand what birth control we're talking about. Either birth control is taking the life of an innocent human being, or it's not. If it's not taking the life of an innocent human being, then it has no impact on birth control.
Well, but if one uses, for example, an IUD, which I gather is part of that Mississippi initiative, isn't that restricting a form of birth control?
But one, Diane, again, the amendment just defines the term person. That's all the amendment does. There's nothing in the amendment regarding birth control or IUDs or IVFs or anything like that. And so people are going to be able to use the birth control that they're already using now. It has nothing to do with restricting birth control unless birth control is taking the life of an innocent human being.
Well, help me understand in what case birth control would be taking the life of a human being.
Well, once the sperm and the oocyte come together and we have the single-cell embryo, we have human life with everything it needs to go forward. At that point, some birth control does take the life of that human being.
What form of birth control takes the life of that human being?
Well, RU486, LO1, for example.
Oh, you're talking about the morning after kind of pill.
Yes. Yeah.
But you're saying that there is no restriction on any form of birth control within that Mississippi initiative?
No. Well, yes, I'm trying to agree with you. It just defines the term person, and the only birth control that's impacted by this measure is anything that literally takes the life of that single-cell embryo, that human being inside the woman.
Okay. Do you believe then that the morning after pill or any form thereof would be considered taking the life of a human being?
Yes, I do.
Do you consider that an IUD would be taking the life of a human being?
It falls into this category, Diane. Once that embryo is formed, any birth control that ends the life of that human being will be impacted by this measure.
So that would then include the IUD. What about the birth control pill?
falls in, if that falls into the same category, yes.
So you're saying that a birth control pill could be considered as taking the life of a human being?
I'm saying that once the egg and the oocyte come together and you have that single cell embryo, at that point, you have human life. You've got a human being, and we're taking the life of a human being with some forms of birth control. And if birth control falls into that category, yes, I am.
All right, let's move on. If you give a fetus legal status, medical decisions then could be made by people other than the pregnant woman herself, even if it's detrimental to the woman's health. Is that correct?
No. Medical doctors will be able to proceed just like they always have. Matter of fact, I'd like to see medical doctors make every effort to save both the woman and the child. I'm not seeing any type of restrictions on what medical doctors can do.
But what if the woman herself decides that carrying the baby in consultation with her doctor could be detrimental to her health? How would you feel about allowing that woman to make that decision?
I don't feel anyone, Diane, man, woman, boy, or girl, has the right to kill an innocent human being. That's where I stand on that issue.
Okay. And what about in vitro fertilization? Where do you come down on that?
This, again, has no impact on in vitro fertilization. That is not going to be impacted. They make thousands of embryos and freeze them. But if the embryo that the woman needs to carry the child, they still be able to do that. That'll still be available to the public.
What about those embryos that are not used?
Again, it comes back to what we believe, that those embryos are human beings. And we're freezing them, thawing them out, and then we're using them in experiments. No, we're not for that at all, because we believe that's a life, a human life, a living human being. But if someone wants to come in and benefit from in vitro fertilization, they'll still be able to do that.
And I want to thank you for joining us, Walter Hoy. He's a spokesman for Personhood USA, president of the Issues for Life Foundation in California. He's in Mississippi to promote the Personhood Initiative to communities of color. Thank you so much, sir, and we'll be right back. And we're back. I want to turn now to Suzanne Novak. She's senior staff attorney for the Center for Reproductive Rights. Suzanne, what specifically will Mississippi's voters look to as they vote yay or nay on Proposition 26?
Well, I hope that they will look at the impact that passing this will have. Amid the onslaught of attacks on reproductive rights around the nation, this personhood ballot is the most extreme, the most dangerous, and the most out of touch with American values.
How so?
It not only bans abortion in all circumstances, even when the woman's life is in danger, even if she's pregnant as a result of rape, but it also will ban many forms of contraception, as Mr. Hoy admitted to a few minutes ago. It will put doctors at risk of criminal prosecution for performing common obstetrical and gynecological procedures. It will probably put an end to infertility, and it will even put women at risk of criminal prosecution for miscarriages.
How so?
If a woman, let's say, has exercised too much or got in a car accident, if the fertilized egg is considered a person, and for any reason she was at fault, she could be prosecuted for initiating that miscarriage. And this isn't something that is just fanciful. This has actually happened recently. There was a woman in Iowa who felt faint and fell down the steps, and she was pregnant, and she was threatened with prosecution.
Isn't there within the law or within the proposition, John Fassman, a question as to whether any miscarriage will be investigated?
I think there is. I mean, I think it's important to remember Mr. Hoyt was somewhat evasive in his answer. The law says what it says. It doesn't say what supporters say it says. And to the extent that an embryo has legal rights, if that embryo is harmed, there is a risk of criminal prosecution.
From your point of view, Bob Destro, you say this is somehow back to the future.
Yeah, it most certainly is back to the future. If you were to go back to Roe versus Wade, you'd find that the Texas Supreme Court had held that the fetus is a person under the Texas Constitution, and that's what the Supreme Court blocked in Roe versus Wade. So this is back to the future. This is basically going back to the states making a policy statement that they want this to be considered two lives in being. For purposes of other parts of the law, for example, in a state's law, a fetus is a life in being. You know, in Georgia, where they have an embryo adoption law, a fetus is a life in being. So there's nothing really new here.
It sounds pretty new to me, though, if someone can be at least investigated, if not prosecuted, for miscarriage.
Well, you know, the law doesn't say that. I mean, I think that what Mr. Hoy was saying, and I think he's right, is that they're setting down a marker. And they're saying the Supreme Court in Roe got it wrong. They said that a fetus is not a person for purposes of the 14th Amendment. This law doesn't say a fetus is a person for purposes of the 14th Amendment. Mississippi doesn't have that authority. So Roe versus Wade remains the law of the land with us in there. And the law will simply have to adjust. There are fetal homicide statutes in other states.
Do you have the amendment wording in front of you? Could you read it for us, Suzanne? I have only a portion of it.
Okay. It states that the term person or persons shall include every human being from the moment of fertilization, cloning, or the functional equivalent thereof.
And that's all. That's all it says. John Fassman, how likely is this to pass?
Almost certain to pass. Mississippi is a very religious, very conservative state. The personhood initiative in Mississippi has waged a fierce and very, very smart campaign. You had Mr. Hoyt on. They've been especially good in reaching out to communities of color. And these are communities that may not see eye to eye with other personhood supporters on every issue, but they had said, I was lucky enough to attend a rally in support of personhood at a predominantly African-American church in Jackson, Mississippi. The bishops there said, look, we may not see eye to eye with supporters of personhood on every single issue. We may traditionally vote Democratic, they may vote Republican, but on this issue we'll come together. And the personhood movement has been very good at laying that groundwork, and I think it's almost certain to pass.
Suzanne, what does this mean, as one of our callers asks? He says, often in vitro fertilization, a number of eggs are fertilized in order to maximize the chances of a pregnancy. Would this law mean that it would be considered murder to not implant a fertilized embryo?
I'm not sure that it would be considered murder to not implant it, but it would be considered murder to somehow destroy the embryo. And I think that if this passes, that it will be the end to infertility in the state of Mississippi. The doctors who practice infertility handle embryos as part of their everyday procedures. And if this passes, they will be under risk of prosecution if anything goes wrong, up to the point of a prosecution for murder. And for example, if the embryos are stored somewhere, if there were a powder outage, you could have prosecution for mass murder if you have hundreds or thousands of embryos destroyed. So you'd have to have a very high risk tolerance to continue practicing infertility in the state of Mississippi if
Robert,
this passes.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that completely ignores the economics of infertility treatment. Those who have been through it know that there's a tremendous shortage of available infants for adoption. And we have a lot of case law dealing with what do you do with frozen embryos. And so part of the rationale for embryonic stem cell research and the use of frozen embryos is because you can't release them. They're considered property under most state law. And so this would reverse that. It would basically, you can't have a property interest in an embryo anymore. And so the question would be, then parents would be encouraged to let the excess embryos go and put them up for adoption. And that's actually happening in Georgia. Georgia has an embryo adoption statute. Pro-choice advocates made exactly the opposite argument. They didn't like it in Georgia, but it's going along fairly well. So I think Mississippi actually, I think reproductive health doctors will actually make more money in Mississippi.
Suzanne.
Yes. What it's important for your listeners to understand is that every major medical association, both within Mississippi and nationwide, are uniformly against this ballot initiative. The Mississippi State Medical Association has said, quote, the common procedures we use now could be interpreted as murder or wrongful death if Proposal 26 passes. The American Society for Reproductive Medicine is against it. It says Amendment 26 is scientifically imprecise to the point of being nonsensical. These are not fanciful arguments that this would that this initiative would drive practitioners out of state or put them at risk of prosecution. That's why the doctors themselves, the Nurses Association, are all against its passage.
Would this sort of measure, since Bob Destro says it was considered back then in 73, would it have to face a Supreme Court challenge?
I think that's the goal of the movement, yes. It's to initiate, it's twofold. It's first to initiate a court battle that leads its way up to the Supreme Court and forces them to consider this question. And it also is to have a federal amendment protecting personhood put on the books. And that's something that personhood spokesmen have been quite vocal about. I think another interesting thing about this is that a number of right-to-life organizations oppose the personhood amendment because they think it's a tactical mistake. The National Right to Life Council, James Both, has said that the problem with this is that if it wends its way up to the Supreme Court, then you could have a situation where the court redefines how abortion is protected. And instead of being protected through the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, it could be protected through the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. Now, that's something Justice Ginsburg has written about in the past. If that is the case, then abortion will actually enjoy far greater federal protection than it does now.
Depending on who's on the court.
Depending on who's on the court, of course. Yes.
And as the court is currently comprised?
And as the court is currently comprised, I think it would probably, I don't know.
Suzanne.
Yeah.
Yes, I am confident this law is so extreme. I have to disagree with Bob, who says it's reverse back to the future, because we have never had a law that restricts abortion in all circumstances, that will let women die rather than perform an abortion, a law that bans contraception, a law that puts women at risk of prosecution and doctors at prosecution for every obstetrical procedure. I think that this law will be dead on arrival in the courts, and I think that the American public will not be for such an extreme law that puts such health and lives in risk.
The Mississippi State Supreme Court would have to hear this first, wouldn't it?
No, they would not. And again, Suzanne says that it's dead on arrival. This is not attempting to define federal law with respect to person. It defines Mississippi law with respect to person. And so there's nothing Mississippi can do right now to criminalize abortion. Roe versus Wade is still the law of the land. And it's only as you get into the more extreme interpretations that Suzanne is giving you, you know, you still got to get legislatures to pass laws like that, and they're not going to do it.
What about that? Aren't there other states considering the same kind of law?
There are. I believe it's on a half dozen states' ballots now for 2012, and there may be more.
Where?
Florida, Ohio, Montana, Wisconsin. And then the other two slipped my mind. But there's, certainly six of them.
So are there other states likely to go for this?
I think that's a very good question. I think there is. The Pew survey a couple of years ago found that there was no state as religious as Mississippi, no state in which voters consider religion as important. And I think that's an important part of this ballot measure's popularity. So I think in other states, it's failed in Colorado twice. I think in other states you would see a much more serious fight over its future than in Mississippi.
And has this now passed both houses, or is it likely to pass both houses of Mississippi's state legislature?
This doesn't do that. It's a strict referendum to get this amendment put on the Constitution. So it's not it doesn't go through the legislature. It just is subject to the voters.
John Fetzman, he's Atlanta correspondent for The Economist magazine, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. It's time to open the phones. First, we'll go to Cleveland, Ohio. Good morning, Tricia. You're on the air.
Thank you. My question just is, when everyone's defining personhood, and even to say that a fetus of any size, two cells or more, is a person, the fact of the matter is it requires a mother. And so the two are inextricably entwined. You cannot separate that. And by calling one of them a person without including the other is a mistake. It just seems like it's a rhetorical mistake, but it's a little bit deeper than that. And I know that the rhetoric here gets real tangled up. It's kind of like Sartre, the same idea. But you cannot even talk about a fetus as if it stands alone, because it does not. And if you allow the state to interfere in circumstances in which they can have no personal knowledge, you have a tyranny.
What do you think about that, Bob Destro?
Well, first of all, in Roe versus Wade, the court basically said that the personhood, that a fetus is not a person, it really didn't care about its status, and it was irrelevant. And that's why I want to correct what you said at the beginning a little bit with some respect, that Roe versus Wade didn't legalize abortion in the first trimester. It legalized abortion for the entire pregnancy if the woman had a health reason for terminating the pregnancy. So we have to understand that the way Roe works, and that's why the point that was made about, you know, a different theory of Roe is important, because the court defined the right as the right to terminate a pregnancy. And when you're dealing with frozen embryos, there's no pregnancy to terminate. And you do have separation, and you do have the possibility of life continuing without the biological mother. And that's why the New York Court of Appeals, which would never be mistaken for a conservative court, said that Roe versus Wade is irrelevant in embryo custody disputes.
Suzanne.
I think the caller brings up a good point, which is forgotten in all this, in all this language, is the woman. And that is, we know, we hope we can all agree, that is the person at issue here. And if you define a fertilized egg as a person, then they will often be in conflict when the woman's health or life is in danger. As Bob pointed out, Roe said a woman has to be able to terminate if her health is at risk. And this personhood amendment has no such exception for it. So, for example, if a woman has an ectopic pregnancy, which means that the fertilized egg is in her fallopian tube and not in her uterus, that egg cannot develop into a baby, and it will kill the mother if it remains in there. And so there is no exception in this ballot measure. If a doctor saved that woman's life by removing that embryo, he could be charged for murder.
What are some of the other complications you see of this particular referendum?
In terms of abortion?
In terms of... everything we're looking at.
Right. In terms of, obstetrical care, anytime a doctor performed a procedure on a woman, let's say performed an amniocentesis, and we know that there's a risk of losing a pregnancy, that doctor could be charged for murder or manslaughter. If a woman comes in and she is hemorrhaging and she's pregnant, the pregnancy cannot continue, but there's still a fetal heartbeat, the doctor, if he or she didn't wait until the heartbeat ended, would be at risk for murder or manslaughter if he helped that woman. So he or she might be put in the position where they would have to choose between letting this woman hemorrhage to death or performing an abortion.
John Fesman, you've been covering this subject. Tell me whether these concerns from your reporting have arisen.
They have, but they've arisen quite late. The opposition to the personhood movement, from my reporting, was late getting off the ground and is fairly weak.
John Fesman, he's a reporter for The Economist magazine. We'll take a short break. More of your calls, your email, when we come back.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by American University, dedicated to educating wonks to use knowledge to change the world. More at american.edu/wonk. By the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org. And by the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.
50 years after its publication, the anti-war classic Catch-22 is still part of the American lexicon. The life and work of author Joseph Heller, and why he said his defining novel was not his best. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. And let's go right back to the phones to Linville, North Carolina. Good morning, Jesse.
Good morning, Diane. Thank you for taking my call.
Surely.
My question has been touched on already a little bit. It concerned ballot initiatives such as this, where how they would handle inherent risks of miscarriage with routine and recommended tests such as amnio, Centesis, and CVS. You know, who would be prosecuted? The mother, the doctor, the nurses as well. Also, in such cases where fertilization has occurred, but we can't have, or there won't be, the development of a baby, as the lady mentioned a few moments ago, in ectopic pregnancies, but those put the mother at such a great risk. I just feel like we're going down a terribly slippery slope here in these decisions.
Suzanne, slippery slope.
I agree. It is a slippery slope, but even more than a slippery slope, it's right here on this ballot measure. For what the caller brings up, it's why all the medical associations, the nurses, if those situations happened, everybody could be prosecuted, the doctors, the nurses, the women. And all the associations are against this, not just because they could risk prosecution, but because their jobs are to protect women's lives and health, and this really undermines it. But like I said before, I don't think that this will pass constitutional muster. It's dangerous that these sorts of fringe extremist groups are pushing these, but I don't think they'll become the law of the land.
And Bob Destro, some, as we've already said, some anti-abortion groups as well as religious groups, such as the Roman Catholic bishops, are not supporting the Mississippi measure. Tell me why.
Well, by and large, because exactly, I think, as John said, that it's a question of tactics. I mean, what do you do given the current political situation? Where do you put your time? Where do you put your money? I mean, the one thing I do have to disagree with Suzanne on is that we're all, those of us who support these kinds of things, are not right-wingers. We're not crazy. You know, we believe that women should be taken care of and that they're part of that, not only part of that equation, the mother is the person who's going to eventually have to take care of the baby. So doctors and medical professionals are charged with the duty of taking care of both of them. Every reasonable doctor that I know sees both the mother and her unborn baby as being part of, as being two patients.
But tell me precisely why you've got the Roman Catholic bishops against this.
Well, I mean, I don't know that they've come out with a formal statement against it. I've never seen a formal statement. I would be really surprised if you ever did, because if you actually pin them down, they'd say, yeah, this is exactly what we've been teaching for a long time. And it, because Roe versus Wade doesn't say that a fetus can't be a person. It just says, as far as we can tell, reading the Constitution here in 1973, you know, it's not a person as far as we can see.
All right, here's an email from Eileen in Vienna, Virginia, who says, so, if my fetus is a person, I will claim the IRS deduction for a dependent during pregnancy. And since every month I could possibly be carrying a new person until the next menstruation cycle tells me I'm not, I will always be able to claim that deduction. How does the IRS like that? Reductio ad absurdum.
Yes, I think your listener has a good point. There will be tons of unintended consequences of this law, and there's only so much we can foresee now for taxes. Who's a dependent, how you count the population for districting purposes for congressional elections, and person usually appears in the law in thousands of places. So we'll have to see how that plays out. It's going to cause some havoc. But again, the most immediate consequences are threatening women's lives and health and their constitutional rights.
All right, to Fort Worth, Texas. Good morning, Martin.
Yes, good morning. Let's say that a young woman travels to a neighboring state and acquires RU486 on the belief that she is pregnant. And somehow or another, officials learn that she's done this. Can someone traveling outside of a state and then re-entering the state then be charged? Thank you.
Suzanne.
It would really matter who would have jurisdiction over that person and that activity and where it was deemed that a potential crime took place. But RU486 is an abortion pill. And if this ballot initiative passes and a person used that, then they could be subject to prosecution.
Do you disagree with that, Bob?
Well, I think that the answer wasn't as clear. I mean, I think that Suzanne's right when she says it's a question of who has jurisdiction. If you go out of state and the other state makes it legal, there's nothing that Mississippi can do about it.
But suppose you told a friend that you're going to another state to get RU486, and that friend happens to disagree with you morally, legally, every other way, and tells on you. Then what happens?
Well, you still have to get somebody to try and stop her.
I'm talking about after the fact.
After the fact, there's nothing that Mississippi can do. You can't prosecute. Mississippi cannot prosecute crimes that occur out of state.
Suzanne, do you agree?
I agree that they can't prosecute if you took the bill pill out of state. But if you come back into Mississippi and you ingest the pill, then you have committed a crime in the state of Mississippi.
All right. Let's go to Chantilly, Virginia. Good morning, Lynn.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Surely.
Good. I'm again on the absurd interpretation of this thing, but I'd like to know how soon after you have sex, say with your husband and it's unprotected, you would have to go and get a test to find out if you're pregnant or not so you can know how to behave subsequently with regard to this fertilized egg. And is there a way to test the morning after unprotected sex to know if you're pregnant or not? I mean, whether or not you've got a fertilized egg or not. And then could you then go, the other lady wanted to claim IRS deduction benefits. I'd like to claim, say, welfare benefits immediately for another child. Or I'd like to go buy movie tickets, and I don't know how many people to say I need tickets for. I mean, it really is absolutely unmanageable, I would think.
John Fassman.
Welfare recipients, well, good luck. But I think these are questions that are asked. That's, I don't think that she'll be getting any deductions from the IRS, and I don't think she'll be claiming any beneficiaries.
I think all this comes down to how does the law know when a child has been conceived? How does the legal community get involved with this, Suzanne?
These are very good questions. I think if you are a sexually active woman, you're going to have to be very concerned because, first of all, you can't use many forms of contraception if this passes. And second of all, if you have to be aware, like your caller asked, you have to always worry if you're pregnant. And if you don't even know it, you could be prosecuted if something happens, even if you didn't know you were pregnant.
All right. To Ann Arbor, Michigan. Good morning, Harry.
Good morning, Diane. Nice to talk to you again.
Thank you.
In the whole spirit of reducto ad absurdum, this law seems to me to open any woman who menstruates to potential charge of homicide. Consider, the sperm is really not necessary to begin cell division. Any mechanical irritation will begin the process, and it'll carry through maybe as many as 4 divisions before spontaneous miscarriage. That being the case, an unfertilized egg is as much a person under this law as a fertilized egg, in which case any woman who ovulates without becoming pregnant is guilty of homicide.
What do you think about that, Bob Destro?
Well, I think the caller summed it up just right. That's an absurd statement. I think that much of this presupposes that people who are pro-life are crazy. We're not crazy, and the people who are enforcing the law are not crazy, and they're not going to be chasing people. If you go back to Roe versus Wade, This did not happen. They didn't prosecute women. They prosecuted the doctors. So this whole idea that women are somehow at risk here, it's just, you know, these are the same laws that apply to inheritance and everything else they considered, but the baby usually has to be born first. You don't count the baby for taxes until it's born. You don't get welfare until it's born. You don't count it for apportionment until it's born. So, you know, the baby has to be alive at the end.
This referendum would change that.
No, it would not.
I don't understand.
All it changes, Diane, is actually doesn't change anything. The states still have the power to define an unborn baby as a person. Roe versus Wade says you cannot act on that. That's why I said it was back to the future. That's what the Texas Supreme Court said prior to Roe versus Wade, that a fetus is a person under the Texas Constitution, and that's why their abortion laws were constitutional, and that's went up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court struck it down.
Suzanne.
I think Bob hits a good point, which is this will be tangled up in the courts for years, and this is not something that we can easily decipher here. But the important thing to focus on is we know what is at risk, and it's women's lives and health that are at risk. And why do we want to put that at risk and endanger constitutional rights and women's health?
All right, let's go to Oxford, Mississippi. Good morning, Lexi. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Surely.
Anyway, I was just calling because I've listened to your show for a very long time. I'm actually from St. Louis, Missouri. And since we don't get coverage from you, I actually stream you through my phone every morning. But I just wanted to say that as a college junior at the University of Mississippi, if this ballot had been on the initiative 2 years ago when I was searching for schools, I seriously would have reconsidered my decision to go to this school. Knowing that my reproductive rights are in serious jeopardy with this initiative, I just don't think that I would have been able to go to a school knowing that, you know, like if I needed the pill, if I needed the morning after pill, if, you know, I needed an abortion, I wouldn't be able to have it.
John Fassman.
I don't doubt that there are many people like her in Mississippi. I think it's a real risk. I would like to return, if I can, to Robert and Suzanne's previous discussion. This is likely to be in court for a long time, and I think that is probably the principal goal of the movement, is to provoke court challenges. Now, I don't know what the actual initiative does itself. If it just defines it on the ballot, as Robert says, I think the implication that Robert is giving is that it's a pretty vapid law, but it's going to provoke court challenges, and
Lexi,
that's what it's supposed to do.
Let me ask you about something. When did you first learn about this referendum?
Well, honestly, I was actually working an internship in Washington, D.C. this summer, and I didn't hear about it until I came back to school in early August. And I think that that's the main problem, is that most young women in the state of Mississippi right now either don't know it exists, they you know, aren't concerned with voting, it's just not, you know, at the top of the priority. And when they hear about the implications that this initiative could have and how it could affect their, you know, their sexual lives, you know, they're really concerned. Honestly, to my generation and the people at school right now, the pro-life movement is painting its Initiative 26 as purely a, you know, this is a pro-life thing. This doesn't have, you know, all these, you know, these terrible, you know, implications behind it. And once they hear, you know, the scientific backing that's on our side, then, you know, young women get scared.
John Fassman.
Lexi, it's John. Can I ask how you heard of it and whether you are active in any campaigns against it?
I actually heard of it through a friend, and I'm actually also a columnist for the Daily Mississippian, our student newspaper. And when I wrote a column on it, I got in touch with several other organizations that are in and around the Oxford area. There's Mississippians for Healthy Families. There's Parents Against Initiative 26. There's a ton of organizations that are active. And, you know, we had a rally in Oxford last week that I actually spoke at, and when you say that the initiative, you know, the anti-26 movement is weak, I'd have to strongly disagree with that. We might not have the big, you know, the big funding that the personhood amendment proponents do, and so that way we're not as vocal. But we're here, we're loud, we're proud, and we really are trying to change everyone's, you know, just get the information out there.
Thank you for calling, Lexi. It's good to hear from you. Thank you. And finally, to Hopkinsville, Kentucky. Kelly, you're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call, Diane.
Surely.
I've
as I've been listening here, I have kind of a different take on things. I'm thinking about the mental health of, let's say, for instance, a young teenage girl that's been a victim of a violent crime. And as a parent, unfortunately, this has been a reality for our family.
Oh, I'm sorry.
When you think about physical health, that's one thing. But what about the mental health of someone? There's no protection for that. You completely eliminate the protection for something like that happening.
What about rape and incest, Suzanne?
That's right. This initiative has no exceptions for pregnancies that are a result of rape and incest. In fact, you know, the messages that the Personhood USA are putting out about this is that just because someone is raped, that that fertilized egg does not deserve to be executed. And so they are considering the fertilized egg, who they consider a person, but not taking into account the woman or the young woman like the caller's daughter.
But what do you say to that?
Well, again, I say that much of the hyperbole that we've been hearing today is just that. It's hyperbole.
Hyperbole,
yes,
Suzanne?
No, I don't think it's hyperbole. There's no exceptions here. I mean,
there's no exceptions to the idea that it's a person. This is not a law that bans abortion.
But Bob, before you said that women weren't prosecuted before, women are prosecuted. You know that women are prosecuted for miscarriages or for behavior they have during pregnancy.
We'll have to leave it there. When does the vote take place, John Fast?
November 8th,
November
Tuesday.
November 8th. 1 week
from tomorrow.
John Fassman of The Economist, Suzanne Novak of the Center for Reproductive Rights, Robert Destro of the Catholic University of America. Thank you all, and thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, Monique Nazareth, Sarah Ashworth, Lisa Dunn, and Nikki Jex. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. AC Valdez answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives, transcripts, podcasts, and CD sales. Call 202-885-1200 for more information.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Constant Contact, committed to helping small businesses and nonprofits succeed. Learn more at constantcontact.com. From PBS, presenting The Fabric of the Cosmos, a new series with physicist Brian Greene on NOVA, Wednesday at 9, 8 Central on PBS. And from Novo Nordisk, since 1923, committed to diabetes care and areas of unmet medical needs at novonordisk-us.com. This is NPR.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, new allegations about GOP presidential candidate Herman Cain once again raise the issue of sexual harassment, how it's defined today in the workplace and elsewhere.